The high point of the exercise is a massive mock combat jump. 2,100 American and British paratroopers, some dangling from unfamiliar parachutes borrowed from the other army. They float down through the night sky to seize an airfield in a fictitious country. Another group of Americans, with machine guns firing blanks, guest stars as the enemy. Colonel Joe Ryan is the commander of the 82nd Airborne Division's 2nd Brigade Combat Team. That's the unit the smaller British outfit is blended into.
What we're trying to do is get ahead of the power curve of where we landed in about the 2001 to 2003 time frame in Afghanistan and Iraq. We knew intrinsically that those battlefields would be multinational. We knew that we wanted to build a coalition, but we didn't do as much about it in advance as we're trying to do now.
Multinational coalitions have become a hallmark of modern conflict. They give political legitimacy to military actions and spread the cost in both money and lives. And shrinking military budgets in both countries make joining forces more important.
You have to jump every 3 months, don't you?
But see here...
Making two armies into one is more about talking than fighting. Private Joe Sturgis and PFC Tiffany Davis lean against a battered helicopter fuselage that's used as a training prop. They're talking shop, how often they have to parachute, the best place in line coming out of the plane, and a perpetual soldier concern, the weight of that pack they lug around. But first, they have to agree on what to call it and how to measure its weight.
How heavy do you think your ruck was?
How heavy? What's my what?
Your
load? 70 kilo.
Holy.
Do you double it for pounds, is it?
I think
about 140 pounds and 140.
Holy smokes.
When two armies are trying to fight like one, they need to be able to talk to each other at every level.
As soon as they land, I'll be out there to grab those pilots and bring them in.
We'll get it tricorded now and rehearse. We're just
going
to
make it work. Exactly.
That's what we do.
Those are frontline commanders, face to face, drawing out a plan in the dirt with their fingers. More often, though, you need to talk by radio, at least if you can. Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Liffring leads the main American engineer outfit in the exercise.
We spent the last 2 weeks putting radios next to each other, keying the hand mics, and actually making the system work. And it's been very difficult to do.
They didn't have time before the big jump to work out the bugs, so they put an American officer with an American radio in with the British engineers. Radios that work. That's the kind of thing you need to figure out before someone is shooting at you. The bottom layer of a set of communication challenges that go all the way up to drone video feeds, systems that track friendly troops on the battlefield, and technology that distributes classified information about the enemy. Colonel Mike Shervington commanded the British unit, which is known as 3-Para.
Stuff to work on is mission command and us to be able to receive orders that the American chain of command wants me to receive. And so we can all talk on the same net at the same time and understand each other. That's still a challenge.
The lessons from the exercise, he says, will be stitched into the standard training for both armies. And Lieutenant Colonel Liffring says fixes are already in the works for things like that radio problem.
We definitely crossed a major hurdle on this exercise, be able to talk with our British counterparts.
By 2017, an even larger British unit, a full brigade of more than 5,000 soldiers, is scheduled to meld into the 82nd Airborne Division. They'll get to test those radios again during that exercise, or the next time the two armies go to war together, whichever comes first. Jay Price, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.